Hi, you're listening to Petri.com's MJF Chat Show. I am Mary Jo Foley, aka your Petri.com community magnet, and I am here to interview tech industry experts about various topics that you, our readers and listeners, want to know about. Today's MJF Chat is going to be all about the evolution of Microsoft Windows from the IT pro perspective. And my special guest for this chat is the perfect person to talk about this, Tim Warner, who is a Microsoft MVP and also a Pluralsight staff author. Hi, Tim, and thank you so much for doing the chat today with me.
Hi, Mary Jo. You're most welcome, and it's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Great. Well, when you came to me originally with the idea for this chat, which I loved, we talked about diving into some of the big picture Windows trends that have had a big impact on IT pros over the years. But since this chat's only 30 minutes, we can't get into everything that happened over that time. In fact, when we're talking about how far back does this go, Windows 1.0 just turned 35 earlier this month. So there's a lot of history here.
That's for sure.
Right? But there is still plenty we can talk about from an IT pro perspective. And some of the topics I was hoping you and I could chat about include things like the move by Microsoft from open by default to closed / secure by default, proprietary to open source and what that means for IT pros, operating system as a service, of course, we can't not talk about that. And then the whole evolution in general of management services like Endpoint Manager and Autopilot, MDM. So there's lots of fodder here. I'd say let's start with the concept of open by default, moving to closed or secure by default. So I'm curious how this change in Windows default security posture has happened, and what do you think it means to IT pros?
Well, to answer the last part first, I think that this evolution matters to IT pros because if a business has a breach or an extended outage, this is not only going to be a resume generating event for the IT pro, him or herself, but potentially a catastrophe for the business. Because most businesses are extended in some way or another across the internet. So thinking back to when I joined the industry, it was in the Windows NT 4 days. Microsoft was moving their protocol stack from really just LAN only, like NetBUI, into NetBIOS over TCP, and then ultimately a native TCP stack. I think that was in Windows XP. I think Microsoft just saw the writing on the wall sooner rather than later and realized they needed to start really thinking of securing server systems as well as client endpoint systems. And I think particularly that sea change, in my experience as an IT pro, really started kicking in with Windows XP and Server 2003. Specifically, like I said, the movement to a true TCP/IP stack that actually included, I guess, some BSD Unix components, which caused Microsoft some legal issues at that time.
I remember that.
The movement from a flat management space, the NT domain, to a DNS-based LDAP directory. That was a big deal at the time in Windows 2000. Then there's, of course, the Windows firewall, or whatever was originally called, being inbox with server and client. And then the originally, I remember it was anti-spyware was the thing, and then antivirus, and then it's anti-malware. I remember particularly I was a fan of Giant anti-malware or anti-spyware, and when Microsoft purchased that company, they used it as the engine of what is now the Windows Defender client product.
Oh, wow. I totally forgot that's how they got that technology.
And then to take it one step further, Vista, I know it's been panned because I guess it was rushed and the hardware driver catch-up issues, but the user access control, the idea of running as a lower privileged user and then elevating access when needed, that certainly was a big deal, although it created headaches for IT pros. Why? Because in doing something different, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Of course, this was broke. It did need fixing.
What about on the Azure side? Do you think IT pros need to be cognizant of what Microsoft's doing around identity and security on Azure in terms of how it will affect them at the client and server level?
Thanks for bringing that point up. Yes, because I really want to evangelize to those IT pros who are thinking, well, we're thinking of Azure eventually, but not now. I've got too many plates spinning locally. Maybe it's later. No, I would suggest you look into it now. Why? Because more and more of these Microsoft engineering teams are putting their innovation first in Azure. And then for SQL Server would be a good example. The innovation in Azure SQL database first, and then if a feature becomes popular enough, maybe it'll be backported to SQL Server local. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the innovation is happening in the cloud. All of the threat intelligence and the AI, ML intelligence, I mean, IT admins, regardless of where their servers are, can benefit from these things.
Yeah.
So they definitely should be looking at Azure right now.
Okay, that's good advice. Let's talk about open source, the favorite topic of all of us in the press and analysts. You know, Microsoft's undergone a huge transformation over the past couple decades from open source foe to open source champion. So I'm curious how you think this impacts IT pros in particular and Windows. That's a big topic, but dig in wherever you want there.
It really is. And, you know, I'm actually going to turn the question back to you, Mary Jo. Because I've been so curious to pin down when that sea change happened, where Microsoft began looking at competitors like Amazon, let's say, instead of ignoring that they exist, looking at them as potential partners, or at least recognizing and providing paths from Amazon. Or did that happen with Satya Nadella, or do you think it happened before?
Yeah, that is an interesting point. And I talk about this a lot in my own work about Microsoft kind of flipping things on their head and no longer looking at everybody as the enemy, and instead looking at potential ways to befriend and at least partner with people they call their co-opetitors, right? So people even like Salesforce and Amazon and Google, it's not just us versus them anymore. And I think that did start to change in earnest when Satya came in as CEO a few years ago. But just in general, I feel like the whole change they've done around open source has been interesting, because it felt like their own employees and their customers were telling them, we need you to maybe not befriend open source, but at least accept its existence and the fact that we use it internally. And they have done that now, which I find super interesting.
It reminds me of something that Jeffrey Snover has said from time to time when he tells the story of PowerShell. Some colleagues were saying, what part of Windows don't you understand, Jeffrey? So I'd like to credit him in there somewhere with that evolution. Gosh, yeah, this is a big subject. I mean, to go a bit to kind of tie over from the previous subject on security, there's the movement, as I said, from the proprietary protocols to native TCP and the BSD Unix pieces in there. Embracing competitors as partners. There's the embrace and purchase of GitHub.
Right.
Microsoft probably was planning that purchase a lot earlier than was announced, because as you know, more and more engineering teams began putting their code in GitHub and open sourcing it to the world. The MS Docs organization, and the fact that the majority of the MS Docs are open source in GitHub, I mean, it's an industry trend. At the end of the day, how do I think this affects the IT professional? I think on one hand, it serves as a disruption, again, because of that human nature factor of, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't mess with me. I feel as secure as I can be now. Don't bump me out of this. Who moved my cheese, to reference that business book?
Yep.
But on the other hand, with Mode 2, as Gartner calls it, IT, and a DevOps orientation and faster software delivery, this forces the IT professional into a more collaborative stream. And I've always seen collaboration and open source as being hand in hand. So again, it just seems like a Microsoft doing a pretty good job of keeping with industry trends over time. And, you know, I imagine that we'll see a Microsoft Linux distribution before too long.
Oh, good. I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, because that's something that's become like a hot topic lately on Twitter, especially. But before I ask you about that, Windows Subsystem for Linux, and how Microsoft's baked that right into Windows 10. Do you see this as a big kind of game changer for the IT pro community? Because I know there are a lot of IT pros and devs who are really jazzed about it, but I'm just trying to get a gauge of like how big a deal is it really that they've got a whole Linux kernel right inside of Windows 10 now.
Personally, I think it's fantastic because at one point in my career, I worked at a research organization at Vanderbilt U, and half the people were committed to Windows and half were committed to Linux. And the Linux people had to do Windows for some work. So as a manager, I'm helping them with dual boot issues, and that's never fun for anybody.
No.
So in that sense, for shops that do have a Linux focus, whether they're developers or administrators, have definitely a win. The fact that Azure, being such a huge focus for Microsoft, and one of its big value propositions is that you can run non.NET applications. You've got first-class support for Java and Node and Python. And if you are an open source developer, you've got that available to you just a terminal session away on Windows. So you can kind of enjoy the best of both worlds. And I also like the fact that WSL is kind of tucked away. It's not in your face. So if an IT administrator and their group doesn't need it, don't worry about
Yep,
it.
yep. Right. Just because it's there doesn't mean you have to use it, right? It's there. Okay,
And we can
let's talk about
uninstall it.
the Linux. Yeah, exactly. Let's talk about Linux though, because you touched on this, and this has become like a big point of controversy. What isn't a point of controversy on Twitter, but Microsoft lately has been making some has been submitting some Linux kernel changes involving Hyper-V, its hypervisor, back to the Linux community, or trying to get that incorporated into the Linux kernel. So this is setting off a whole wave of people saying, do you think Microsoft's going to do their own, Microsoft Linux or whatever? Or at least, I had one guy say, at least they're going to just change the underpinnings of Azure so that it's Linux based and not Windows based. And I'm like, that seems like a really big thing to me. Like, that's not just like, oh, let's take Windows out and put Linux in, right? So I'm curious what you make of what they're doing here. I mean, there's even, we just found out recently, there's even a Microsoft Linux distribution called CBL Mariner, which is Common-Based Linux Mariner. And this is something they use internally at Microsoft, but it's setting off this whole wave of speculation. Like, is Microsoft going to try to become a Linux vendor in its own right? What do you think?
Well, first of all, thanks for that heads up on Mariner. I'm going to track that down as soon as we get off this conversation. I didn't know that. I mean, due to operational security, I know Microsoft isn't going to tell it. Well, then again, they have given a lot of details about what's running in their Azure data centers, that Project Phoenix or the open source, all that. Best as I understand, in a non-NDA context, those physical hosts are running some highly specialized version of Server Core. And again, to kind of stitch together our previous subjects and bring that into now, back in the security context, think about Windows Desktop Server to Windows Core, and then Windows Core to Nano Server, and that stripping away, reducing of the attack surface. It would, on one hand, you'd think it's almost trivial for them to go from a really stripped down Server Core kernel to a Linux one. But yeah, I can't imagine with the footprint that Microsoft has and the partnerships that they already have, I don't know if switching the kernel outright, that seems like it would be too big of a lift.
I
More
agree with
reasonable
you.
to me is, as you say, this magic that Microsoft is already doing, being able to, in a Hyper-V context, run virtual machines that use the Linux kernel in addition to VMs that use the Windows kernel on the same box. That seems more doable.
Agree. I think that must be what they're doing. I can't imagine like a wholesale rip and replace going on inside of Azure. I don't see why or how that would make any sense at this point.
But on the other hand, there's historically, and I know you know this more than anybody, of a vociferous group of open source people who are just vigorously anti-Microsoft. And I know that there's been some, I wouldn't call it a diaspora, but a number of customers when Microsoft bought GitHub are like, we're going to GitLab. We're going anywhere that Microsoft isn't. And I don't know. I mean, am I biased? I've been a Microsoft specialist for over 20 years, but if I saw something that was untoward, for instance, I don't think I'd be a Microsoft specialist anymore. So for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. That's why you're an MVP. Like, you guys are supposed to have your hand on the pulse, but also remain unbiased.
Right.
What some people think.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about operating system as a service, because this is a very contentious topic among all people engaged in having to deal with Microsoft's feature updates to Windows 10 and Windows Server. So when Microsoft originally started talking about this more than 5 years ago, they actually were talking about doing 2 to 3 feature updates per year for Windows Client and Windows Server. So right now we're at 2, roughly one major one, one minor one per year. So I'm curious, first, do you think this is working for IT pros? And do you think we're going to stay at 2, and should we?
Do I think it's working now? No.
Yes.
Do I think it potentially could? Yes. Here I am flexing my MVP non-biased because I'm going to say something controversial.
Do it.
From what I understand, Microsoft released a whole bunch of their QA staff a few years ago. Mm-hmm. So how can you do that and then accelerate your releases?
Yeah.
Witness what's happened with Windows client updates over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. Need I say more?
No, that says it all right there.
break fast, quick fast, DevOps, rapid release. That's awesome. But if you're missing the QA piece, you're hosed.
Yeah. Yep. I mean, I think it's funny you bring that up because I think that applies on Azure as well. Like the last few months, we've been seeing a lot of problems with Azure and with Office 365, and it does come back to QA in the end, like people rolling out patches without it being adequately tested. Not a great idea, right?
I know. I mean, on one hand, Microsoft has made its name being a dog fooding company, but they're making mistakes that they provide solutions for themselves.
I know. So what do you think they can do to fix it? Like if you were giving them advice and saying, Microsoft, this isn't really working the way it is, I would like you to do what?
Well, two things that come off my mind is literally make a decided, concerted effort for QA.
Yeah.
Whatever, look back, if they haven't already done a postmortem on releasing all those QA people, look back, fix that, period. You need staff. Secondly, I know that Microsoft has really come a long way over the last several years in listening to their customers.
Mm-hmm.
Pay particular attention to IT pros who are responsible for patch management.
Mm-hmm.
Really listen to them. 2-year cadence, certainly no more than 2 years, but is the twice a year cadence working for them, even if Microsoft sorts their Q&A? And if not, take their feedback to heart more, because I think I'm pretty convinced there's some stuff falling through the cracks there. Look at Windows Insiders. Don't get me started on Windows Client and whether Microsoft has been listening to the Windows Insiders community over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, fair point. And I think next year is going to be very interesting because we've kind of fallen into this cadence where we've had a major Windows Client update in the spring and a more minor one in the fall. And the fall updates are the ones that get 30 months of support. So IT pros have kind of felt like, okay, if you're going to force me to do 2, this is a good way because I can just adopt the fall update and kind of keep rolling. But there's a rumor right now that next year, the major update might be in the fall and the minor one in the spring, which would kind of throw everything on its head and also throw into question the whole, 18 month versus 30 months of support. So I guess stay tuned there on that
mm-hmm.
one.
Yeah, for sure. In the meantime, what I hear, generally speaking, is config manager personnel are grateful for tools like Windows Server Update Service and Configuration Manager where they can gate these updates because Microsoft sometimes likes to sneak them out. I know I've been bitten myself getting ready to present a class or a webinar and all of a sudden my machine's acting wonky. Windows Update has done some stuff in the background and I need to reboot and keep my fingers crossed.
Yep. It's happened to all of us, I think. I've, it's happened to me on podcasts. And yeah, you're suddenly like, and my machine is updating. Yay. So let's talk about management services, because obviously that's another IT pro hot button. There's a lot going on here, right? Microsoft's been doing things to try to consolidate Intune and ConfigMan around this new brand they have called Endpoint Manager. There's still a lot happening on the WSUS and SCCM integration front. I mean, what do you think IT pros, just in very broad strokes, should be paying attention to first and foremost on management services right now?
Nowadays, I think of buzzwords like single pane of glass management, because the chances are good that the business is hybrid cloud, potentially multi-cloud. So we're thinking of management stuff that can stretch like that. I'm thinking of vendor neutrality as opposed to proprietary. I'm looking at you, Apple. Coverage of open source components like vulnerability scanners that can pick up vulnerabilities in open source because it's likely there. I agree that Microsoft's done some really nice engineering with Configuration Manager and WSUS. However, I'm disappointed with this whole endpoint business. The like in Azure, for instance, Azure Security Center, the what used to be just I think a single SKU, a single standard tier, is now decomposed into all this Azure Defender. I'm confused, and I'm supposedly an MVP who's got my finger on the pulse.
you know what's not helping? This year, they have changed the branding on so many Microsoft products, especially around their security products. I'm like, I give up. I don't even know what's brand of what anymore.
It is absolutely nuts. Yes, all of the endpoint stuff are what is their status now? It's really terrible because there's a lot of great potential in there. I mean, Intune, for instance, can handle mobile devices, iOS, Android, Mac OS. I mean, it really is. It's hitting all of those points that I mentioned a moment ago. But the challenge, it seems to me, for the IT professional is understanding what exists where today, what its licensing model is today, and how likely is this, are the sands going to shift over the next days, weeks, months?
Do you, out of curiosity, look much at what they're doing around the single pane of glass management with Azure? I know they've been really talking up since last Ignite this whole idea of Azure Arc, which lets you have a single pane of glass and manage your services, your Microsoft services, even if they're running on other clouds. So in theory, this sounds like, you know, the perfect world, the perfect storm, but I'm like, is it really working yet for anybody? And I wonder if that model somehow trickles down to on-premises too.
Yeah, my take on Azure Arc is that it's early days for sure, but I like what they're doing, organizing it as in workloads. So for instance, you know, you can collect your server VMs or physical servers from your data center, other clouds, EC2 instances in Amazon, for instance, and you can apply a single layer of governance from Azure and onto those. And I know they're doing that with Kubernetes and with databases as well. I think that's great. Azure Sentinel in the security space looks to be fully, I mean, again, it's expanding the library of connectors that it has, but it's got connectors for AWS. And, you know, if you're using Cisco hardware or F5 or Barracuda, you can bring and aggregate all that data into one spot. All of the what used to be the operations management suite tools, now they're part of, I guess, Log Analytics or Azure Monitor for Logs, whatever it is this week. The idea of gathering all of your diagnostics data into one spot. Yeah, that's a good example of Microsoft looking at the world outside of their own ecosystem, whereas it looks like, my perspective, AWS kind of acts like Azure doesn't exist. You know, I don't think that's a winning strategy personally.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how that evolves. You know, the co-opetition with AWS and Microsoft, because I feel like there's some partnering happening with Microsoft and Google, surprisingly, on various fronts around browsers and even backend services. But on AWS and Microsoft, it seems more like haters going to hate still is the rule of the day there.
No question, but it appears to be one-sided. For instance, if you go and look in the Microsoft docs, they've got all of this great stuff on Azure for AWS professionals, and Google has followed suit. They've open sourced their docs, and they've got Google Cloud for Azure professionals, Google Cloud for AWS. What do you see in AWS? Nothing in terms of welcoming customers. Come on. I mean, you have to understand, multi-cloud is becoming more the rule than the exception.
Yeah, it's true. Just like heterogeneous on-premises operations as well, right? I mean, for a while, it was like Microsoft's guidance and other people's guidance was, well, if you use everything from Microsoft, it just works, right? But that's not how people work, right?
No, that's how Apple is. It's weird because professionally, I'm all Windows with some Linux. But at home, my family and I just happen to be all Apple. And you're exactly right. If you're all Apple, it all works beautifully. And that, hence, is the value proposition. But it's a premium value proposition.
Yeah, definitely is. Great. Well, Tim, we are just about out of time here. So I just wanted to take a moment to say thank you again for sharing your perspective, your historical perspective, and your projections about what might be coming and what's next. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. I love talking about this stuff. Thanks, Mary Jo.
Great. And for everyone else listening right now or reading this transcript, I'll be putting up more information soon on Petri about who my next guest is going to be. So once you see that, you can submit questions directly on Twitter for the guest if you'd like using the hashtag MJFChat. And in the meantime, if you know of anyone else or even yourself who might make a good guest for one of these MJF chats, please do not hesitate to drop me a note. Thank you very much.